Hello, I'm Daniel Gregory, and thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of The Perceptive Photographer. This is part two of a two-part series in our podcast on a couple of elements of the Gestalt approach to psychology and how those are influential or important in our understanding of photography and how we view and understand the photograph, how we understand the photographs we take, and how we interpret, understand, and analyze the photographs we look at. For those of you who didn't listen to last week's podcast, the Gestalt approach to psychology was developed in Germany in the 1930s, and at its core was about how did we perceive the world? How did we understand and make a sense of a very chaotic environment? How did that get broken down into small components so that we could understand everything that was in front of us? One of the great phrases that comes out of this approach to psychology is that the whole is something else than the sum of its parts. And by understanding the whole through those various parts, we understand that the parts themselves don't make up the entire object, and that just because we understand some of the parts doesn't mean we understand the whole object. It is only through the understanding and analysis of looking at every aspect of the image or every aspect of the scene do we start to understand what was actually going into our understanding and perception of the things that were in front of us. This week, I wanted to talk about two of the fundamental principles of the Gestalt approach. One is the law of similarity, and the other is the law of past experience. And I think those are really important as we consider aspects of photography and how we understand and create compositions behind the camera and how we understand, like I said, and critique images that we might be experiencing. The law of similarity is really about how we perceive objects within an image or within a situation and how we view and group them together, but because we perceive them to be similar to one another. And that similarity could be because of form, shape, color, size, position. All those different elements can come into play, and they're what build our association of one thing to another. In photography, I think this is one of the important aspects when we start to learn to read into a photograph and we start to experience a photograph. We start to see how things in an image may relate to one another or be influenced by something else in the frame based on its relative size, weight, and position. So if you think about a very large car and a very large balloon, they could be somehow related to one another because of size. Or two objects in the frame could have the same color. A woman could be wearing a red dress, and there could be a red billboard in the background. And all of a sudden, because of the color red, what is written into the billboard and the woman in the red dress somehow relate to one another. Or maybe it's by texture. Maybe there's a smooth texture on somebody's face and a smooth surface on an automobile, and those two textures somehow relate those objects to one another. The relative size is also important. Like I said, the shape, the color, all those things come into play. And this is one of the things we see in Joseph Albers' Interactions of Color, where colors work together not necessarily because they're complementary or because they're in relationship to one another, but colors work together because of their relative size and shape and weighting against each other as one of the components of how we might judge color. So it goes beyond just what the colors are and their harmonious or complementary relationships, but they could in fact work together because we get a similarity and an understanding of them because of the function they're playing by size within an image. Another example of something where similarity could come into play is we start to group certain objects together or shapes together within a photograph. We hear this a lot when you hear people talk about the number of triangles that may occur within a photograph, or a circle and a square, or the number of diagonal lines, different elements within the photograph where we start to see repetition of imagery. We start to group the similarity and the nature of those objects together so that they become related to one another, even though they're disparate within the frame. So when we're looking at how to compose a photograph, one of the things we have to start to get related to and have to start to understand is as we're looking through the viewfinder, how are the disparate colors, shapes, sizes, textures, forms, lines, all interacting with one another? And sometimes we only have a few seconds to make that decision, but we need to start to see that, oh my gosh, there's something of volume and size in the foreground that could prove to be a distraction, or that it might relate to something in the background, and I don't want that relationship to occur, so I need to change my point of view. But by starting to see how those objects and structures relate in the image ahead of time, allows us to make a more thoughtful and intentional photograph behind the camera. At the same time, during the critique process or analysis process of the photograph, there's an opportunity here for us to have a dialogue about our experience of the photograph and saying, rather than I like or don't like it, or I don't understand the photograph, or it feels funny, or it feels like I am engaged with the photograph, but I don't know why, to start to look at what do we view as things that might be similar or related to one another in the photograph and the things that aren't, and see if that helps explain our relationship to various aspects of the photograph. So if you realize there's a mountain on one side and a wave on the other side of the image, that maybe it's the continuity of those two shapes that allow you to experience the landscape as one continuous form rather than it being two disparate forms of water and land. It's their unification of shape that allows you to experience them as something similar rather than different. Or maybe it's the opposite. Maybe you don't see them as related to one another because of the shape or size they represent in the frame, and that could cause a disparity. The second element I wanted to talk about, and this one I think is one of the more interesting elements because it's not specific to everybody. Most people experience symmetry in a similar way. Most people experience continuity in a similar way. They experience the notion of proximity in a similar way. But one of the laws of the Gestalt approach is something called the law of past experience. And what that says is under certain circumstances or under a certain set of given conditions, we are able to input visual stimulation and figure out what the object is or what the object should be or complete the object because we use our visual memory of what possibly could be that object or how that object possibly could be related, but it's completely based on our past experience. An example of that, a real easy example of this before we start talking about photography is if you are no matter what language you speak, there's a set of letters or a set of characters that drive the language. And so in the English language, for example, L and I could be written to look very similar, but you will use your understanding of what letters and words might fit together or how letters fit together to spell certain words to let you distinguish between what could be an L or could be an I. That approach is what allows you to see a word, use the experience you have in the past to try to decipher or solve the puzzle that's in front of you. So when it comes to photography, this is one of the things where I think there's an interesting approach to how this works that allows us to really play the edge of some interesting components to photographs. One of the things that I think is really interesting in photography is the notion of incompleteness. So we talk about where to bisect somebody's arm, and if we're going to cut somebody off, so we make sure we don't amputate them, or where they should be positioned in the frame, or how much should be cut off at the edge of the frame, or how much of an object needs to be included or excluded. And I think one of the things that's interesting is, given where you position that in the frame and how much you might position in the frame, allows for the viewer to look at the image and complete the object. And what's interesting is, in certain circumstances, we may not know what the object is, so we will rely on that past experience to attempt to resolve the conflict that's in us of not knowing what the object is, and it allows us to start to build further storytelling elements within the photograph. So if positioned right, we start to wonder, is that the edge of a chair? Is it the edge of a table? Is it the edge of a bench? Is it a rock? What is it at the edge of the frame that's not complete that allows us to engage in the story? If given enough of the information, we're able to come in and complete potentially what the object is, given our past experience, and aid our understanding of the story that's attempted to be told in the photograph. For example, if you cut off and have left just the back legs and the back of a chair, somebody could probably infer that that would be someplace somebody would be sitting. But if you left just part of the leg of the chair, we might need some additional information such as shadow detail or position with another object within the frame to figure out what that is. But you're allowing for us to deal with these unresolved concepts by using our visual memory. The challenge here is it's not consistent across everybody in every culture. So you can't rely on everybody knowing exactly what something is. So you need to develop some level of segmentation or breaking apart of the various components of an object so that they remain weighted to relatable. So if you try to get too abstract, it becomes a complete abstraction and somebody may not be able to complete the puzzle based on that past experience. But as long as we hold into the plausibility of what the object was or potentially what the object was, it allows us to create a really interesting, I think, way to engage with the audience. One of the other things this allows us to do is we're allowed to rely on people's past experiences to shift their primary expectation of what potentially could happen within a photograph. And we can do this through the use of color, shape, and form. So for example, in many cultures, we use the nomenclature of the color red. One of its indicators is it means stop, and green means go. So we could use the idea of using green and red as components within the photograph to indicate a movement forward or a need to pause or hold position within the photograph, given the colors that are present. So that's another opportunity to think about a past experience, a past perception that somebody might have based on their experiences that allows them to experience the photograph in a different way. I don't think there's an exact specification or an exact, you know, hard science to apply in some of these psychological principles, but I did find it interesting as I started to return to this and look at some of these concepts from, you know, that I learned back in psychology, but to look at them today under a different eye and how they might apply to photographs and how they might be present in photography in a way that allows us to better understand the things we're attempting to do and the things we're attempting to create so that we not only experience behind the camera differently, but also have the experience of reading and analyzing a photograph in a much more meaningful and insightful way, and understanding what might be the cause of some of those reactions we have during the analysis part of photography. And also, I think it provides an interesting position to help us understand why we have sometimes a reaction to certain images. Are we responding to proximity of objects, the similarity of objects, something from our past experience that's allowing us to complete something within the frame that may or may not be true? As you start to think about your own photographs and start to look at your own photographs, I think it would be interesting to start to look at how do you build relationships within the photographs? What are the kind of things you notice in your own work and how objects relate or don't relate to one another? And in what ways do you realize how much you're subtly influenced by the need to create closure or the need to define similarity, or how much are you in many ways manipulated by the photographer or by the image by having to complete certain things or having to follow certain lines or having to create groupings of objects because of size or shape? I think it would be interesting to go back through your work and see, can you identify some of those kind of core elements in the way you process and experience the work? I hope you have a great week. I hope you're able to get out there and do some really creative things or take some time for yourself, even if it's just to sit in the park and breathe in the environment, enjoy what's out there, just kind of get present to the moment. I think you can get a recharge on your creative process by just finding some time to step back and give yourself a moment to breathe and to take in some additional oxygen, and then put that fuel back in the tank so you can go out and do something really amazing and creative this week. Don't forget, you can always find us up on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, all the places that podcasts are found. And if you're also interested, we'd love to take a review up there. I would really appreciate that. I will see you next time and have a great week.